Blog Talk Radio.
In Dallas, Texas, on Monday, June 26th. Today, we're going to be chatting with our friend Michael Bargo. We're going to get his thoughts on what's happening in Illinois, what's happening in that big land of Lincoln, as he've known it all these years. There's obviously some problems out there, and it has to do with money. And what will happen next? What will the state do? What can they do? And will they go to the federal government for some money? They may have to, which is, of course, going to create a rather interesting situation given everything they've said about Donald Trump and some other issues like the sanctuary cities and issues like that. So we'll get into all of it with our friend Michael in just a second. Going back in history today, 1948, this is the day that President Truman began what came to be known as the Berlin Airlift. And this is truly one of the great moments of American decision-making, or American leadership, I should say, in the 20th century. The Soviets had basically blocked out the city of West Berlin. They were not allowing anything to come in or anything to leave. They had left these poor people in West Berlin completely out of touch with the rest of the world. And President Truman said, well, we're not going to put up with that. So they began daily air flights, the airlift, as they called it, and supplies came in through the air. And then something very interesting happened, and that was the beginning of what came to be known as the candy bomber. And these were planes that would go in one every night or every couple of nights and would actually drop supplies for children, and they would drop candy for children. These came to be known as the candy bombers. And it was just the whole thing was just an incredible display of American leadership and American heart. And I just think this is one of the great, great moments of American leadership in the 20th century. I have a post over at the American Thinker this morning having to do with Obama and Russia. I think this whole Russia thing has turned, and it's now going to turn against the Democrats because they just cannot go anymore. They can't go any further with Trump. There's nothing there. But there's a lot with the Democrats because of all of this happening in the last year of Obama, and frankly, President Obama or his administration doing anything about it. So I think this is flipping now against the Democrats. And over the next few months, I think a lot of Democrats are going to regret the day that they started this whole Russia thing, because it's coming back to them right now, and it's coming back to them in a way that I don't think any of them had foreseen. Finally, I have another post that I'm working on about the city of Seattle. Hopefully it'll be available this week. The city of Seattle recently increased the minimum wage. They mandated some new minimum wage, or a new minimum wage. I think they took it up to 15 cents or $15 an hour or something like that. So as a consequence, jobs are being lost, businesses are closing, or they're cutting back on the number of hours. And the reality of it is that the people that they were trying to help, a lot of the lower wage, lower income people, are exactly the ones that they are hurting. And this Seattle minimum wage thing has turned into a disaster, again, for the people that they thought they were trying to help. And it's just a great lesson on the unintended consequences of not really thinking through what you're going to do. Let me say hello to my good friend Michael Bargo. How are you, Michael?
Hello, Silvio. Great. Thanks for having me.
My pleasure, as always. How's the weather up in the Windy City?
Oh, it's beautiful. It's very sunny today. It was about 70, the cool breeze. It was just a little bit warm, and it was fantastic.
Great. Well, we try to catch up with the weather up there when we see the Cubs games or the White Sox games. It's nice to see that summer is coming to the Midwest. Well, I want to talk to you a little bit about what's happening up in the state of Illinois. As I mentioned in the introduction, they have a lot of problems, and you've written a lot about the city of Chicago, of course, indirectly about the state problems as well. And as I understand it, correct me if I'm wrong, but as I understand it, the state government right now does not have a budget. I think they've gone now 2 or 3 years without a budget. So how are they running things if they don't have a budget? I mean, they have, what, continuing resolution? How are they doing it, Michael?
Well, they're just, you know, like you said, they're just hobbling along, doing continuing resolutions for some of the essential things. But it's just a small sign. It's like the signs before an earthquake, because the benchmark date right now is July 1st. If they don't sign a budget by July 1st, and they've gone 2 full years without a budget, and July 1st is the start of the next budget year, and if they don't have one, Standard & Poor's credit rating said they're going to put them down to junk bond status, which is below investment grade, which means borrowing money, if the state issues bonds, it'll have to pay like 6.5% interest at least, which is a huge waste of money just when they really need it. And this is all caused not by a lack of revenues. It's like Washington. The state has more revenues coming in than ever, but the huge demand on money by the outrageous pension programs is just has collapsed the state. I just read the other day, this is from the Census Bureau and Department of Commerce, the state of Illinois has grown, the Illinois state economy has grown less in the last 10 years than the United States grew in the 10 years of the Great Depression.
Yeah, amazing. No, it's just amazing. Now, it's fascinating, though, because I was always under the impression that states had to, you know, had to balance their budget. I don't know how Illinois is, but most states have an amendment that says you have to balance the budget. So without a budget, how can they be constitutional? I mean, I'm surprised nobody has challenged that. I know you're challenging them on some other things, but I mean, as far as just the constitutionality of continuing resolutions, I'm surprised that they have not been challenged, Michael.
They basically do whatever they want, and Illinois does have a balanced budget, law, I guess, in the state statutes. But what they do, they balance it by borrowing money. That's the thing. So now they've got, I don't know, tens of billions of bond debt that they could probably never pay. And it's just, you know, borrowing money, it's a classic thing, borrowing money to pay bills. But these bills are now, this is the enormity of what is paid for pensions, what is paid out right now for pensions, okay? The pensions have an unfunded liability of $250 billion, more than any other state by far. And one-fourth of the state budget goes out to pay pensions today. And in Chicago and 9 other cities, mind you, these are not small towns. In Chicago and 9 other cities, all of the property taxes go only into paying pensions. None of it goes for public services like police and fire and so on.
So how do they pay for those? I mean, how do you pay for the police in let's say, Chicago?
Well,
how do you pay for the police?
Well, the police have been, Rahm Emanuel has been putting off a police contract with the police union. They're pretty aggravated, and they've been laying off. That's one of the reasons for the high murder rate, is they're aggravated with the whole city. And what they do is, we have a pack of cigarettes costs $10.50. We have the highest sales tax in the nation, and we have real high taxes. For example, my father lives in the city, and he gets his natural gas bill. It has 14 fees and taxes on it.
Wow.
Just on the home gas. And we have one of the highest gasoline taxes. So, since all of the property taxes go to pay pensions, they have to fund the public services through taxes on everything else, from parking meters to parking downtown to sales taxes. They put a new one on soda pop. By the 1 penny per ounce, that's doubling the cost of a liter of Coke. They're not going to stop until everybody's you know, either moved out or in poverty. I don't know what they don't have any plan.
Right. Well, I wonder how all of this is impacting, you know, let's say business people who go to Chicago. Are they paying like very high hotel rates
and
I mean fees all over? Because, you know, that's one of the ways that you can always make money is by obviously taxing people who
sure.
come to your state. But that is short-sighted because eventually, you know, there are other places you can take your convention to, if you know what I mean. So,
well, they've been losing if you rent a car at O'Hare Airport, the city owns O'Hare Airport. They seized that when they built it. And it's just outside. It used to be outside the city limits, but the city took it over. And you rent a car by O'Hare, the tax for the city alone is like 27%.
Wow. Yeah.
And
so
outrageous.
This is madness. I mean, this obviously cannot go on. Now, a lot of this is due, as you mentioned, to the dysfunctional nature of not just Chicago politics, but the state politics. Now, I may have told you that at one time my brother lived in southern Illinois. He actually worked in St. Louis. He was like one of those who lived in southern Illinois, and it's like 20 miles over the border. And I used to hear from him a lot of complaints about, you know, the cost of living and all of that in southern Illinois. And one time when we visited him, we had a chance to talk to some of his neighbors and some of his friends. And most of them would love to separate themselves from the city of Chicago and say, hey, we'll form our own state. You know, somebody take Chicago or turn Chicago into an independent state. Of course, they wouldn't survive independently, but there must be a lot of hatred, political hatred, that is, between the people in the rest of the state who are basically the ones funding all of these politics out of Chicago, Michael.
Right, and when old man Daley was around in the 50s, 60s, and 70s, the original Mayor Daley, he ran the entire state of Illinois. That's how he got JFK elected. Was he had command of all the delegates at the presidential convention, and he ran for office. He controlled. He was the head of the Cook County Democrat Party, and he was the mayor. So he controlled who got on the ballot to be run. So if you wanted to run for office, you had to cater to him and join the organization and work for many years before you could move up and so on. You're right. The southern Illinois people can't stand the idea about they think too much money is going to Chicago. And it's even – well, there's a lot of – of course, there's a lot of taxes produced by Chicago, but I think even then they still being shortchanged in southern Illinois.
Yeah. Now, I would think if you go back to the days of the first Daley, Richard Daley, the one you're talking about, that, yes, he probably squeezed every dime that he could out of the state. I don't doubt that one bit. But at that time, the city of Chicago was a wonderful city, a very productive city, and there were some very prosperous middle-class suburbs around the city of Chicago. The reason I know this is because when we lived in southern Wisconsin, we used to go to Chicago once in a while. It was lovely suburbs all around Chicago. I mean, just a lot of prosperity. You could just see it. A lot of middle-class suburbs and a lot of industry. I assume a lot of that is gone. People have either left the city or a lot of those businesses have closed or moved overseas or whatever. And now Chicago is nowhere near as much of a taxpayer as it may have been at one time. Relative to the whole state, Michael.
Yes, of course. And now 47%. The reason for illegal immigration in Chicago is Chicago was the first city to have its mayor declare it a sanctuary policy. That was 1985. Mayor Harold Washington, first black mayor, did that. Not because he didn't do it because he's black, but he just did it because the city wanted to do it. The teacher unions are the biggest campaign contributors to the state, and they wanted to keep their classrooms filled. So today, 47% of the students in the Chicago public schools are Hispanic. And they survive with largely with federal money. So it's a federal government who's propping up the city financially, really. Because last year, I think it was 2015, I wrote about this, 3,000 millionaires left Chicago, the most by far of any city in the country. The only cities
yeah.
that came close were Rome and Paris. And Rome had, I think, 4,000 and Paris 7,000. But Chicago was only world-class in having – so they took tens of billions of dollars of assets out of the city because they figured there's no hope, it's never going to get better.
Right. And that's the sad thing. You know, there's just a sense that there's no solution. Well, let's talk a little bit about the role, if any, of the federal government here. Obviously, the city will come to the federal government, after all. It does have two senators and – 15 or 18 members of Congress, and they will try to come to the federal government to not necessarily for a bailout, but for some kind of assistance, what could happen? I mean, how could this work out with President Trump and the sanctuary cities and the crime in Chicago? I mean, it seems like if Chicago were to negotiate with the federal government, that the federal government could really demand some tough conditions out of the city of Chicago that may not be very popular with the Democrat Party, Michael.
That's an excellent point. And you know what, Silvio, you're the first person listening to the local television and newspapers around here. They don't really talk about a federal bailout or compromise between Emanuel and Trump. Mayor Rahm Emanuel is the kind of guy who his attitude is, he has a huge ego. His attitude is, it's my way or the highway. And Trump is kind of the same way. So I don't think there's a lot of room for compromise between them. As you may recall, as soon as Trump got elected, Rahm Emanuel went and visited him at Trump Tower, and he came down the elevator, got out of the elevator from talking to Trump. He didn't look very happy. I think Trump basically read him the Riot Act about his sanctuary status and all that. So I don't know.
Right now,
federal government is the largest employer in Chicago. 45,000 people in Chicago work for the federal government.
Amazing.
And a lot of people are dependent on federal programs. The whole education system is. They've given money. One of the things Obama did with that $800 billion, remember that troubled asset recovery. Well, not just that, but the money after that. They gave money to municipalities all around the country. For example, when Stockton, California went broke, people don't know this. They were giving all of, probably 50 or 80 top officials in Stockton, the police chief, fire chief, deputy chief, all them people. They got bonuses that were bigger than their salaries in 2010 and 11. They took money out of the maintenance for the fire engines in Stockton, and I read this in their bankruptcy ruling. Stockton's fire engines were in such bad shape, every time they went out on a call, they had to be followed by a wrecker because they're likely to break down.
Yeah.
And then
Obama bought them
a new fire engine with FEMA money, that sort of thing. They use federal money to replace the public services expenses. That's how they help, is what I'm getting at.
See, I don't think Trump's going to play that game.
No.
I think Trump is going to be very eager to help because I think he obviously wants to make new voters or get new voters. I mean, that's understandable. I mean, he doesn't want to see Illinois go broke either. But my point is that I think he's going to sit down with him and say, look, you want us to help? Here's what you have to do. And
right.
I think that's when the sanctuary cities will end. I also would not discount the possibility if Chicago keeps getting, if the crime keeps going the way it is, I wouldn't doubt the possibility of federal troops coming in as part of that deal too, just to put federal troops, or not federal troops, but I mean the National Guard on the streets, or troops on the street to stabilize the situation. So I think Trump has a lot of cards to play, and he's kind of sitting back waiting for Emanuel to go see him again. That's my sense here, Michael.
Right, and I think you're exactly right, but you're one of the only person I've heard talk about. Well, here's another aspect to it. Why should Trump come in and help Chicago, which is probably the biggest Democrat machine still in the country, when the Democrats are trashing him every day about the Russian collusion and his daughter and his son-in-law and all this stuff? He's probably going to wait for them to knock it off and start cooperating with him. You know what I mean?
Oh, sure. Well, that's the point I was making, that he right now Trump has all the cards. Let's just put it this way. He's got the money. And it seems to me that what you can have here is a situation where Trump sits back and says, okay, you guys keep calling me names, you guys keep doing this and this and that, but sooner or later, you're going to need money, and you're going to have to come to me or the Congress. I mean, I don't think the Congress is going to be any more friendly than Trump is, and that's when I think we may see some very interesting things. Now, why would Trump do it? Let me put an idea on the table as to why Trump would do it, because I think Trump could actually look very good with, let's say, the minorities in Chicago who are the victims of the crime, if he were to take a very tough stand against the crime. And so I think that's another reason that he would do it, Michael.
Exactly. That's an excellent point. We're going to have to wait to see for that. But here's another element too, though, Silvio. Democrats don't want to do anything to make Trump look good. So they're not going to cooperate in having Trump come in with a federal law enforcement program, with advice on the streets, more money on how to patrol the streets, more police cars. They don't want Trump getting any credit for that. So, you know, they don't give a darn if kids get shot in the street. They'd rather see the kids dead than see Trump get reelected with a lot of votes.
Well,
I hate to say it, but it's
right
true. Is it? Pardon?
No, you could be right about that. I think you are probably right about that. But I also think that sooner or later some of those checks are going to start bouncing also. Because, you know, they don't have any cash. So, I mean, it's they're not in a very pretty position. I mean, I've always, all throughout my life, I've learned one thing about any time you have money problems, you don't have a lot of power to negotiate. I mean,
right.
Whoever, when you have money problems, it's the other guy who's got the power, not you. And I think
right.
That's the situation Chicago is in right now. That's my feeling.
Well, what you've talked about the last 5 minutes is something I don't hear of people around here. People around here don't talk compromise. They don't talk about, just look at the attitude of the DNC toward Trump. It's nothing but trashing him and trying to destroy him and his family and his reputation and get him impeached. There's no thought of working with him to get anything done.
Yeah, well, that may just be a lot of posturing, Michael. I've always felt that with politicians, you sometimes have to separate posturing from reality, and I think there's just a lot of posturing going on. I know that you've been, before we go, I wanted to give you a chance to update us on the lawsuit that you have been working on, and I believe you've made some progress in that. Why don't you take a couple of minutes and talk about it, Michael?
Thank you. In October, I sued the state of Illinois. They have in the Illinois State Constitution, Article 13, Section 5, it's called the Pension Protection Provision. Get this, the title of the thing is Pension and Retirement Plan Rights. And it says anyone who's a member of a state pension, a school district pension, a municipal retirement plan, has an enforceable contract, and that the benefits shall not be diminished or impaired. Now, and then that's accompanied by some Illinois Municipal Retirement Fund, Illinois statutes. These are laws. And you won't believe it, so I'm sure your listeners cannot believe this. But Illinois actually passed laws that says state grant money going to communities, you know, for new sewers, for the public school to get a new heating system, fix the roof and all that, they can take any money out of any municipality in the state with no restriction. They've closed down mental health homes, all this. They take money and they can put it in their pension fund. And it's legal. Well, it's
wow.
Not constitutional. This is what I'm fighting. And the big development is I sued in the Central District, because that's where Springfield, the capital, is. Three federal judges recused themselves within 5 days. They finally got a judge to take it, and then he dismissed the case with not really a good argument. So he's actually moving it along for me. He could have stretched it out for 6 months or a year, but he was nice enough to get rid of it as fast as possible. So now it's downtown at the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals, and I just got a letter Friday that the because I have to work by mail on Pro Se, letter that Lisa Manigan, who is the daughter, who's the official, the top, she's the Attorney General of Illinois. Her father is the one who runs the state by running the state legislature. She is now going to be facing me in the federal court.
Wow.
So it's
and
going to be interesting.
When do you think that will happen?
Probably, I was thinking today, the end of October is probably because I have until July 11th to file my brief, the first brief. Then they have 40 days to respond. Then I can respond to that. Then they can respond to my response. Then I can reply. Then they can reply. Then it's over.
Right.
By the time that all those time limits run out, it's probably going to be the end of October or early November.
Now, while all of this is going on with your lawsuit, some of the other things that we were talking about before are also going to be going on. Do you see any connection between the two?
Well, certainly. If they've been hiding this. I contacted four of the big watchdog groups, you know, who report on corruption and all that. They haven't even reported that my lawsuit is in federal court, even though that's public information. I don't even think they'll report that Lisa Madigan, who's the big shot in the state, I don't even think they will report that she's going to court against me. For they hide all this stuff. They've been hiding. They've been putting a big rug and a big cover over all these financial problems in Chicago for decades. It's been really bad for 10 years, but now it's past a critical stage. It's probably
right.
past the stage of no return right now.
No, I think that you're exactly right. I think right now it's at a point where there is no, as you say, point of no return. They cannot, you know, they can no longer pass the buck or kick the buck or whatever the can or whatever the
right.
expression is. There's no longer any, I mean, basically we've reached the end of the road, and either there's a bailout or there's going to have to be some drastic restructure of the state finances, because this is, it's over. I mean, the game is over, as they like to say, Michael.
And you have an excellent idea about, no one around here talks about a compromise between Trump and the mayor.
They're both deal makers. I mean, look,
yeah.
I don't think very highly of Emmanuel. I think he's been an extremely irresponsible mayor, in my opinion. But I also know, in his whole life, he's always been a deal maker, and he's going to look out for his legacy. And there's not any good right now for his legacy. I mean, his legacy right now stinks. But if he could work out some kind of a compromise that helps the city. I mean, he doesn't care anything about what it does to the people of Chicago, but if he could work out a compromise and, you know, get some good publicity out of it, you never know. He may be thinking about running for president. You never know. I mean,
he has been for years thinking that his
sure.
next step. You may not remember, but he was the White House chief of staff for a couple of years.
He was. No, I know.
Yeah.
I know he was, and he I think he's always been a man. With ambitions, let's just put it that way. And there's nothing wrong with that, by the way. He's not the only one in politics with ambitions. I mean, they're all basically ambitious people. But in order for him to run for president, he's got to have a success story. And
right.
at this point, Chicago is not a success story. It's a mess.
The worst failure
in
the country.
It is. So if he could somehow work out a solution for Chicago and then... You know,
but
all of a
here's
sudden
the thing,
he's the deal maker. It may work out for him. I'm not saying it's likely, but you never know. What he's doing now isn't working for him.
No, here's the thing, though, Silvio. You brought up some great stuff here. Here's the thing. Rahm Emanuel is caught between, if he makes a deal to improve the city with Trump, the DNC won't allow that. They don't want Trump to look good. See, Ron wants himself to look good, all right, with the deal. But the Democrat, the National Party, does not want anything to make Trump look good. And they're willing to throw Emmanuel's career under the bus to keep Trump from getting reelected. Don't you think I'm right?
No. Look, I don't disagree with you at all. I mean, look, the irrational attitudes over. I mean, the Democrats are so irrational. About
yeah.
Donald Trump, that I don't disagree with you. For all I know, you're 100% correct. I was simply speculating about Emmanuel, because I've always felt that he's an ambitious person, and he's got to know that right now he's got no future. I mean, right now he doesn't have any future.
No.
He would have a better future if he was able to work something out to save the city of Chicago, and at least go down in history in a positive way, rather than right now, which is, you know, not very good. Well, Michael, as always, thank you for your time. It's always a great honor to have you. I know we had a lot to talk about, a lot of stuff that we can pick up at another time. Keep me posted about your lawsuit, and we may get together in a few weeks and continue our chat about Illinois, because I think it's very interesting.
Yeah, after July 1st, if they don't pass a budget, then the stuff will fly again. We'll see, but we'll have a lot to talk about. It's great talking to you again, and we could talk all day.
I know. Unfortunately, we can't. But that just means we have another opportunity. We have another reason for talking again. But thank you for your time, and keep doing the great work that you do.
Thank you so much. Take care.
All right, we're going to take a little break, and we'll be back with a closing thought right after this. Well, what an interesting topic. Our thanks to Michael Bargo for joining us today. Michael, of course, is a contributor to American Thinker. For those of you who read American Thinker, I'm sure you've seen many of his many, many articles that he writes about Chicago. He writes about immigration. He writes about Hispanic issues. Very interesting background, very interesting variety of topics that he covers. And today we spoke about the situation in the state of Illinois, which is about as dysfunctional as anything can get right now in the country. I mean, they don't have a functioning government. I don't know how else one can describe what's going on up there. No budget. There doesn't seem to be any relationship whatsoever between the government and the finances. I mean, when that happens, obviously, you have a dysfunctional government. Of course, you know, we've written a couple of times at American Thinker about Brazil, and we've written about what's happening in Brazil with crony capitalism. And I think in many ways, Chicago, Illinois, is the American version of crony capitalism. And we've seen what it's done to a wonderful state. I mean, it's a great state. It's a great state. It has the city of Chicago has a huge history in the United States, in American history, obviously the second or third largest city in the United States. I think it's number three right now, but nevertheless, one of the great giant cities of North America. And it just has sad to see what these politicians have done to a great state and to a great city. So we'll see what happens. This is Silvio Cantu in Dallas. Thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you later.